It's Friday, March 3rd, 2017. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press and Raging Chicken Media. Each week, I talk to our capital muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Well, this week in Trumplandia, folks, it was Trump's first address to a joint session of Congress. And the ability to read a speech on a teleprompter leads some pretty gushing reviews by the media and several high-profile Democrats. Knowing the Democrats have to steel themselves for a long fight, Democrats chose former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear to give the response to Trump. Beshear's address did help insomniacs, but led most progressives to yell at their TVs for most of the evening. We'll talk more Dem fail in a little bit. Meanwhile, progressives in the states aren't waiting for the National Party to get its head out of the sand. More and more progressives looking to run for office and protest have not subsided. Jeff Sessions first did not and then did have conversations with Russian operatives during the presidential campaign while serving as a surrogate for Trump. Sessions plays the nice old man card, emphasizing his, oh, golly, come to think of it, defense. He's now recused himself from ongoing investigation in Trump's Russia ties, and the plot just thickens. And earlier this week, Pennsylvania Representative Rick Saccone announced that he was challenging Senator Bob Casey for Senate in 2018. Saccone was on hand, and he helped protesters to understand our godly heritage. Tuesday with Toomey activists were arrested in Philadelphia for trying to meet with Toomey. And this morning, Sean got up bright and early to join some activists from Lancaster Stands Up at a Chamber of Commerce meeting with Republican State Representative Lloyd Smucker. Smucker, you can pretty much write this script, was refused to hold town halls for his constituents. So Lancaster Stand Up folks said, we're going to hold our own. Sean was inside that meeting, and he'll give us a full report. And yours truly makes his debut on Free Speech TV, doing the Resistance Report on Rick Smith's show every Saturday at 7 p.m. Rick, as you know, has been a longtime friend of this show. We've worked with Rick for years, and 2 weeks ago, he launched his weekly TV show on Free Speech TV. That can be seen on Saturdays at 7 p.m. on Free Speech TV. You can get that at freespeech.org, or you might have Dish Network or DirecTV, or you can get it on the Roku app. But tune it in. I'll be doing a short segment each week called The Resistance Report with a focus on activism. This week, we profile some student activism. All right. Remember, folks, we need you to help keep progressive activist media going strong. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $2 a month. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.org and look for the support and membership tab. Click Become a Member. We are also on Patreon, if you like. If you want to be a member through Patreon, just click Become a Patron. If you're not ready to become a member, you can still make a one-time donation by clicking Donate. For a limited time, you can also pick up one of our exclusive unpaid protester t-shirts over at Teespring. But hurry up, it's going to be available for just 3 more days. We've also re-released our alternative Facts Are Lies t-shirt for a limited time, so we got some great response to that. And the reason why we're doing this is because proceeds from t-shirt sales go directly to support our awesome team of writers. And next week, we just may be launching another exclusive design. Stay tuned. All right, we're keep on digging in for 2017 in Trumplandia, folks, and we need you, the progressive community, to help deepen, pull no punches, progressive media that will hold power accountable. Thank you all for your support. So, Sean, welcome to another week of Trumplandia.
It's great to be here again. I guess it's the same script, another week.
Same script, another week. But, you know, let's start closer to home because, you know, that script is not, you know, just something that's happening national. I was, you know, I felt like I was in school this week because I learned about our godly heritage, Sean, you know, thanks to a guy who might be running for Senate.
Well, no, not thanks to a guy who might be running for Senate. Thanks to a guy who is running for Senate. Apparently, our godly heritage is plastered everywhere on every single piece of artwork inside our Capitol building. We just haven't noticed it. You know, like going back to William Penn, who died, I think, like 72 years before the Constitution was signed. Going back to all that. Yeah, from William Penn all the way up and through today. Our godly heritage.
Yeah, it looks like I'm going to have to rethink this whole separation between church and state thing, right?
Yeah.
So what happened, Sean? Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I did have the opportunity to ask that question.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, so we had the big last week, if people remember on the show, we talked about Representative Rick Saccone announced that he was going to run against Toomey. And this week was his big event. His announcement, and Sean was there in the Capitol for it. And man, I'll tell you, that was kooky.
Yeah. So we have the full recording up on our website. You could listen to Timothy Barton, who is David Barton's son, who introduced Representative Rick Saccone speak, and then the full Saccone speech. The audio is about like 20 minutes long. Definitely, maybe we should put that in our podcast link today. People can definitely go in and go listen to that. But I basically went there with one question to ask. And I had the chance to ask that question. I thought it was going to be afterwards. I didn't think it was going to be 5 minutes before the thing started when Representative Rick Saccone got engaged with a bunch of protesters. A bunch of local Tuesday with Toomey activists showed up there on Monday. And they had a couple banners on bed sheets unfurled. And one of them read, David Barton, you are fake news. And you are the company. No, David Barton is fake news. And you are the company who you keep. And
exactly. Well, let's stop right there for a second, because David Barton, right? His son, as you said, Tim Barton, his son, was there on hand to introduce Rick Saccone. Originally, it was going to be David Barton, and David Barton was
he broke his leg.
You know, he's like, poor my daddy broke his leg. Leave him alone. He's a nice man, right? That's how Tim Barton was talking about. But so he was supposed to be on hand. He was the founder of the Wall Builders, and the Wall Builders as this really kind of nutty, kind of right-wing Christian organization that has been basically pounding the argument for years now that this whole idea about the separation of church and state is just basically a myth, right? So there's the setting. These are the people that Saccone has chosen to introduce him and to associate himself with.
Exactly. And one of the things I was saying, I got two questions I'm going to ask, right?
Leave my daddy alone.
So I told Roxbury and a couple of other people in the media, listen, I got one question I'm going to ask, and I'm going to wait for the right time to ask it. I was thinking, you know, there's going to be a press availability afterwards, and I'd be able to ask them afterwards. But like 5 minutes before Saccone event's about to start, the protesters unfurled their banner, and Saccone goes over to the ones who had that David Barton banner, and he starts arguing with them, right? And so I grab my camera. I'm on the other side of the rotunda, and I see this go down. So I'm like rushing. I'm literally like pushing people out of the way, pushing the geriatrics out of the way who were there for this. And sorry to be ageist there, but I pulled Roxbury, and I'm like, dude, we got to go over there. We went over there. And I'm standing like right in between the protesters, right? And Saccone is like facing me, like facing right at the camera. So I just start recording. And one of the things he says is like, my God will make a seed of a nation. You see William Penn right there. And he's just like pointing about like this, and there's separation church and state arguments going on. And then I just pop out a question. Oh, so you thought this country was founded to be a Christian democracy or a theocracy, a Christian theocracy. He's like, no. Never said that. And I got the part. I was like, who said that? I was like, well, David Barton. And then the person standing.
Leave my daddy alone.
So the person standing with him starts mouthing off to us because we don't know what's going on here. There's so many things like happen. For a 2 minute video, there's like 20 different things happening at the same time. And we didn't figure out that this was Tim Barton until he spoke at the meet at the thing. It's like, holy crap.
My daddy's a nice man.
So there's argument going on, and there's like 10, and they're like, no, he never said he's Christian theocracy, right? And there was like a 10 second pause where Saccone could have stopped, right? And just walked away from there. But then he came back and said, what you got to realize is this country was founded on a godly heritage. And he's just like looking at me, like moving his hands, like, you know, what you got to realize is we got family godly heritage. It's all throughout this Capitol. And then my favorite part of the line is, you know, they're talking about godly heritage. He's like, and you see up there in the Supreme Court, there's a 10 by 14 foot painting of Moses pounding on the Ten Commandments right behind our chief justices. That's godly heritage. And yeah, like that was my favorite line of that. But I think the funniest part was your heritage. No, Native Americans were here first. Yeah, well, after that.
After that. He's like, yeah, one of the protesters says like, well, yeah, but you came in and killed all the Native Americans, right? And he's like, I've been talking after that. I mean, like, after the genocide, right? Everything was great after the genocide.
And then you look at towards the end, right? Towards the end of the video, they're talking about, like, what about other heritage? Yeah, well, we're found Christian, Judeo-Christian heritage and none of that other stuff.
None of that other stuff. Exactly. I mean, it was pretty nuts. I mean, and here you go. This is, once again, why you need to have, like, progressive reporters on the ground, is because this kind of stuff goes down all the time. And this was not the kind of thing that Saccone was planning on getting up and talking about godly heritage, because we should say godly heritage, right, comes right from the book. Right,
it's the title of the book. It's right from the title of his book, America's Godly Heritage. We have George Washington genuflecting in the woods, right? Looking up in the sky.
Barton's book.
Yeah, Barton's book. And so we got a couple other things about this, right?
The one thing about that too, so you've got to remember, folks, here you go. You got a guy who's going to run for Senate, right? You've got statewide Democrats doing the same kind of stuff that the national Democrats did during the election. You're like, oh, this guy is kind of a nut job, whatever. But you don't see that unless you push to see it, right? This guy is out there and he's like, we're not talking about conspiratorial kind of like seven degrees of separation between the nut job, right? It's standing next to him as he's giving his announcement. You know what I'm saying? Even if poor little daddy did break his leg and he couldn't show up, Timmy boy was there.
So one of the best things about it, right? So you see Roxbury's in there. And so I watched Roxbury's video, right? And as this argument's going down, his camera's panned towards where I'm standing. And in the background, you see this guy with black glasses on, right? And there's always a smaller guy, older person with black glasses in the Capitol. And that's John Bear from the Philadelphia Daily News. And if you ever read some of John Bear's columns, you can tell he's a cynical prick sometimes, right? Like, you know what I mean? That's kind of like his.
Tell us what you mean, Sean.
But no, I think I love him. Like, I love his, like, I love that type of reporting where he's just like blunt, cynical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he's standing back there with his glasses on right next to me. And you can see like his eyes are usually like sharp down. His eyebrows were like facing up. Like his eyes were just like, you could just see him like grin on his face, eyes are popping up. And this was kind of the reaction everyone in the media had who was watching this whole entire event unfold. We were all just like, we're like, what? like this is just absolutely insane.
Well, I'm telling you, you know, it's good on you for being down there, Capitol floor and kind of capturing that. I mean, that video went insane, right? I mean, if you looked on our Facebook page, Sean posted a Facebook page. This guy, I mean, I don't know where it's at right this second.
14,000 hits.
There you go. 14,000 hits already, right? And the reach is well over 20,000, close to 30. And, you know, this is, you know, it's an example. People are paying attention to this stuff, and it's not the kind of thing that you're going to get in your mainstream media, you know, in part because, you know, they would feel weird about posting that stuff. Now, one thing I have to say about that, because I want to kind of move on to what happened in Philadelphia. But one of, for me, and this is not on our, on the audio recordings that is up on our podcast for the link to, but I'm going to play a little clip of it on our break. There was these girls singing God Bless America. It was the freakiest performance of that song I'd ever heard. And so this is when you listen, when we get done with this segment, right? Just listen for a little bit for that song. And if anybody's ever watched Man in the High Castle, right? If you listen to the Edelweiss at the very beginning, like it's kind of like the show's theme song at the beginning of that, this is like the God Bless America version of that. And it's just creepy, right? It's creepy given what this guy's ideology is. And you know, these girls coming and singing this song, and look, the it's not their fault. I mean, they had beautiful voices and stuff like that, but the arrangement was just a little bit kind of,
and then everyone kind of joins in, my country tis.
Yeah, really flat, like, and kind of, I mean, it was just
very monotone, and like, it sounded like, and one of the other things, right? So, you know, we have a picture of this, right, up online, right, of Saccone, right, with his arm in the air looking like the good fascist everyone. This is what a fascist really looks like, type of thing. But you see him giving this.
Leave my daddy alone.
He's giving this animated speech, and you just look at the faces of the people on the stairs. It's like you could see right through them. Like there's no facial expression right there. We were talking about this afterwards. It was almost like Dawn of the Dead, or like people like from a cult.
It was very
eyes
strange.
Closed. eyes glazed over, no facial expression. There was no emotion in the eyes, no emotion in the face, and like the cheeks are smiling. Everyone was just like zombified.
Yeah, it's just really weird because you expect something like this. You're giving your announcement for your campaign US announcement. Senate. I mean, you're usually you've got, you know, your signs, people cheering behind you and all
and
this
you
kind
see
of
the
stuff.
One sign behind them in the one corner.
Yeah.
With two kids holding man plus woman equals marriage. And they spelled woman wrong.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's our future right there. So, all right. Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened in Philadelphia. So, you know, we've been following the Tuesday with Toomey stuff for a while. Sean's been on that right from the beginning. And so something went down in Philadelphia, Sean.
Right. So I've been on it from the beginning with the Harrisburg protest, which is caught on shortly after Philadelphia and Pittsburgh exploded at the beginning of the year. And then Harrisburg's joined on. We've been there since every Tuesday. And one of the things, like in Philadelphia, this has been going on since November, right after the election. It started by a 29-year-old professional nanny and a few other women who we had the opportunity to meet and sit with at the Progressive Summit last week or a couple weeks ago. And last week, this movement took another step forward where they practiced in civil disobedience, held a sit-in inside the federal building in Philadelphia, right in front of the elevators, and got 11 people, I think, got arrested for blocking an entrance. Then they were demanding a meeting with Senator Pat Toomey. I've said this before on the podcast, and I'll say it again. I think I've said this since the beginning, really, that this is our version of a Moral Monday type of movement. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was lacking in that Moral Monday style movement that Tuesday with Toomey was the civil disobedience. Mm-hmm. You know, and now it seems like we're going to see where this movement goes from here. Because it's showing no signs of slowing down, right?
Right.
And exactly. Also the people who are protesting all the time at the Tuesday with Toomey movement in Philadelphia, in Harrisburg, where I'm at, are also getting involved with other protests in the area. Like they're showing up the stuff Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Like these people are showing up on their lunch hours. They're showing up in their free time. And, you know, you see what happens when you get 15 protesters at a Senate campaign rally, if could throw everything off. And that's what it did Monday morning.
No, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there was a big kind of uproar when Toomey had announced that he was moving his office in Philadelphia, right? He was moving it from its longtime office, moved it into a federal building. And now Toomey's office basically claims that there's a Senate rule that if there's space available in a federal building, then that's where you had to have your office, right? Instead of a private, like a privately owned rented place. And so that's what they're saying is the reason for doing it. It just seems strange that all of a sudden they're very concerned about moving that office, especially when these protests are ramping up. The reason why that's important is because the penalties for being arrested for, say, civil disobedience in a federal building are much higher than they would be otherwise. So instead of it being a local issue, then it becomes a federal issue. So there was a lot of kind of pushback on that. And now we're seeing exactly some of the results of what's going on. This is in a context. I was on you'll kind of hear us talk about this. So if you're listening to the Free Speech TV thing, the Rick Smith show, Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Free Speech TV, we're going to talk a little about this, about some of the legislation that is being proposed nationwide for criminalizing protest. And, you know, this is what really concerns me about this, because this is a movement that's growing. But, you know, as the saying goes, you know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. So we're getting closer to that win.
Yeah. And there's also there's also legislation around the country where people think if you're standing in a sidewalk or a street, you can run someone over. So
Exactly. I mean, if you look at the Washington Post did some great reporting on this, reported in over 18 states, or at least 18 states. There's been this kind of legislation that's being proposed. And there was a victory of activists kind of in Arizona recently to kind of beat some of that stuff back. But, you know, it's pretty frightening. You know, it makes it harder and harder to see the word fascism as simply just, you know, kind of an extreme term to use, because some of the measures are getting pretty nasty. Anyway, so that Tuesday with Toomey, we got to keep an eye on that. And folks, really, you know, that is just a freaking amazing movement. So get out there and join folks with that. So lastly, we'll see how far we get into this before we have to take a break. But so, Sean, you were up way too early this morning. And if we're able to get the video up for this, you're going to get to see this. But if not, I got to let everybody know that Sean right now has got a pink paisley tie on that he wore this morning, early in this morning. Not his usual attire. But, you know, I got to say, it's looking sporting, Sean.
Thank you. A lot of people at the chamber breakfast this morning in Lancaster thought it was pretty good.
So why the hell were you at the Chamber of Commerce this morning?
Because I became a full-on Trump supporter within the past week.
Okay, end the podcast. We're done.
All right, no. Well, all kidding aside, today's guest at the Lancaster Chamber of Commerce event was Congressman Lloyd Smucker. He represents Lancaster City. And a bunch of activists from Lancaster Stands Up and other groups within the area have been demanding that Lloyd Smucker give a have a town hall meeting, right? Mm-hmm. He went to have a town hall meeting with his constituents. And a few weeks ago, there was a thing where Lancaster Stands Up sent hundreds of letters in the mail to Lloyd Smucker, and Lloyd Smucker had a photo of him reading their letters saying, "Oh, we will address your concerns, and we're proud for the community engagement," and some like bullshit like that from Lancaster Stands Up. Basically, he used that, like, those letters as a photo op, like, "Hey, I'm listening to you." Mm-hmm. So earlier today, there was a $40 a person breakfast with Lloyd Smucker, one of these Eggs and Issues breakfasts, wake up for the issues, right? With the local chamber leaders. And about five of the Lancaster Stands Up activists paid the $40 fee to go into that rally, into that breakfast, right? And as that breakfast was going on inside, there was a town hall, a mock town hall set up by Lancaster Stands Up on the outside. And over 120 people showed up for that at 7 o'clock in the freezing morning in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is pretty amazing if you think about the getting that many people out Friday on a work day like that. So, and it was pretty interesting being in that breakfast. First time I've ever been one of these events. And it was interesting hearing what people were talking about. Especially
before we get to the chamber stuff, let's wait for the chamber stuff to after the break. But there were activists that just simply because I want to give some time, and we're running way long here. So what was the purpose of getting activists into the meeting?
So the activists went into the meeting and they allowed Lloyd Smucker to speak, right? I thought they were going to interrupt him throughout his speech, but they allowed him to say what he wanted to say, right? And during the question and answer period, some of them got up and started yelling, you know, "We demand a town hall." And the video online is a little contentious, right, that we posted, basically like saying, you know, their response was, "Well, people paid here and people want to ask questions." And their response was, "Yeah, we paid here and we're demanding a town hall. We paid to get into this event and we want you to have a town hall. You know, why do we have to pay $40 to come to some breakfast to go see you speak in a private event when you're unavailable to the public?"
Right. And and that alone underscores this, right? The fact that, you know, "We paid, we expect to be able to do this." So there you go. You want to talk about how money kind of influencing even at these kind of local levels, like $40 for a chamber breakfast to get to be able to kind of meet with your representative to ask questions, right? The people that normally go, I mean, I don't know about everybody who's listening to this podcast, but, you know, I'm not usually looking for when the next chamber breakfast is so that I can get up and go to it, right? But there are people who are, right? Those corporate business leaders, those people that are right, that know what the chamber is about, right? This is all about access. And, right, you know, I thought it was a freaking amazing idea to have activists inside there, right? And having you there kind of like, you know, again, reporting on it, kind of taking video and things like this, to say that, no, these little private spaces that you're carving out for yourself are no longer safe either.
And
right?
Inside,
if we have to, we will be there.
Right. Inside, it got a little contentious. One of the female organizers was speaking, and female constituents, you know, I like to say refer to them as constituents because they are from Lancaster and they are, you know, they are represented by Lloyd Smucker. And yeah, one of the old men,
definition of a constituent, right?
Yeah. Old white man says, "Shut up. I didn't pay to listen to you to say this." You know, basically told this lady to sit down and shut up. "I didn't pay for this." And she said, "Yeah, I didn't pay for this. I paid for this and I want him to have a town hall." And it got really contentious out there. They had private security within the hotel area. you know, just, it was just, you know, they were sitting like in a bakery truck, you know, not even like a security truck, but then you can see walkie talkies back and forth.
Sorry. You know, it was just, that just a setup for so many jokes about bakery products and security guards. But I mean, I'm just saying,
but the fact that they got 120 people out here to hold a mock town hall outside of the chamber event, you know, I like these type of actions because now you're encroaching on their space.
That's right.
This is when they start to worry. It's like, wow, these people are coming for us.
That's right. And that is what it's going to take. I mean, you know, I mean, let's, you know, we talk about the, you know, the metaphorical, you know, that's the, you always hear this from this kind of right wing, well, they're bringing their pitches and torches, right? Well, we can bring our metaphorical pitches and torches. And really what that means is that you just show up and you encroach upon these private carve outs that they set up for themselves to give themselves exclusive access. But pretty crazy. But listen, so when we come back, Sean and I were talking about this before we went on air today, but Sean was not expecting this, but was going there primarily to cover the activist stuff. But as part of that, sitting listening to some of the discussion about what the chamber wants, right, and some of their agenda, that became interesting on its own score. But we're going to come back after the break, and we're going to lead with that after the break. But right now, I want to give you a little piece of the freaky God Bless America stuff that was featured at Rick Saccone's announcement. And, you know, for fans of Man in the High Castle, listen up and tell me that there is an eerie resemblance here. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. National headlines spread fear of the growing wildcat strikes at Chrysler and Briggs auto plants in Detroit. The wildcats had increased to 35,000 strikers and idled workers at two Chrysler plants and seven Briggs plants. The strike wave started a week earlier at the Dodge main plant in Detroit. Eight of the union's best leaders had been discharged for refusing to go along with a production line speed up. Briggs management followed Chrysler's union busting campaign by firing seven UAW officers at the Mack Avenue plant. 3 days later, Briggs fired another eight committee men and stewards, which then provoked the walkout. Company officials and the War Labor Board were outraged at the halt in war production of tanks, B-29 super fortresses, anti-aircraft guns, rockets, and trucks. The Michigan legislature introduced a bill to define as a felony any strike participation that violated a labor relations contract. The War Labor Board demanded that both sides meet in Washington to end the walkout. Strike leaders defied the wartime no-strike pledge and ignored the international's threat of disciplinary action. Strikers had the full backing of local UAW presidents. The UAW conceded that management had provoked the wildcatting through indiscriminate firings. Workers argued that if the War Labor Board prioritized production over union busting, they would order the reinstatement of all the discharged leaders. The Flint Labor Council passed a resolution demanding that all CIA CIO, and other union representatives resign immediately from the War Labor Board. It considered the board as stacked against labor. Workers at Chrysler and Briggs would soon end their walkout with guarantees of arbitration for reinstatement of the fired militants.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. So when we went to break, we were talking about the Chamber of Commerce action this morning, being organized by Lancaster Stand Up. And Sean was inside the chamber breakfast where Representative Lloyd Smucker was speaking. Citizens were there demanding a town hall. There was some disruption of the event, and Sean got some video from that. But Sean, before we went on air today, you were also telling me that what was interesting in its own right was some of the discussion among people from the chamber. Why don't you kind of walk us through some of that?
Right. So, you know, I am a little bit of a recognizable face within the Harrisburg community, especially with the lobbyists and everything. And I did recognize some of the chamber lobbyists who were there from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Chamber of Business and Industry. And the event started out with a lady who represents the Great Lakes Chamber of Commerce, like Great Lakes chapter. So like your Rust Belt states who went for Trump, mm-hmm. pretty much. Like these are the states that like she operates in. And
So there weren't, this was not just lobbyists from Pennsylvania, but these are folks from out there.
This lady who spoke, who opened up the thing, I don't have her full name.
That's okay. Sorry.
She was a special guest, and she talked about some of the priorities going on in Congress. And she was from this chamber that like a federation of different chambers or something like that that represented states along the Erie, along the Great Lakes region. So basically, your Rust Belt states, pretty much that sit along the Great Lakes. And she was there. She flew in from Chicago for this, believe it or not. And she was talking about some of the different things. So I don't have a full list of notes. I didn't bring a notepad with me. Uh-huh. But I was not expecting this. But what I did, I just start like rapid fire some of these things up on my Facebook page just to like I can rehash and talk about, right? So one of the first things she talks about, she said there's an opportunity for reforming the tax code in Congress for the first time in 30 years. She said this is like she emphasizes this is like a once in a generation issue that they're going to reform the tax code. And it's something that they seem like they want to push hard. Then she came out and said, hey, it's a great thing that President Trump is getting rid of Obama's clean water rules from the past 4 years. So clean streams, you know, she's basically saying it's a good thing to allow that now with industry can now dump shit into streams again.
Right.
You know. And going after the environmental protections, right? So the next person comes up. It's the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Government Relations Representative Alex Harpler, who is who's based in Harrisburg, someone I've seen a bunch of times. And basically, he's praising Smucker for his work in the Pennsylvania legislature, how they got to know each other in the Pennsylvania legislature, and he basically said that Harrisburg's loss is Washington's gain. Right here, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's one of the things I got from that. And then I move into Smucker. Smucker's talking about repealing and replacing the ACA. And he was talking about meeting up with insurance companies in his office. You know, and basically saying the insurance companies are telling him that it's a death spiral. So these are people meeting in his office and he's speaking to the business community saying, hey, the insurance companies are meeting with me privately. So man, I can't hold town hall meetings.
Right.
Right. I can't speak to the public, but you're free to come into my office and speak to me, especially if you're representing the business industries.
No, I mean, you get the sense of like you've got layers of constituents, right? You've got the real constituents and you've got your nominal constituents, right? The real constituents are those people, right? The people that they're paying attention to are those people that are inside the chamber that are meeting in his office that have no problem getting access to them. The nominal kind of public, right? Nominal constituents are those people that we vote for these people, right? The ones that this guy is supposed to be representing. So you get to see these circles of influence.
So it gets better, right? Then I'm
great.
Scrolling through my notes. He then goes, like, talks about, you know, calls those covered by the Affordable Care Act a small population or a small percentage of the country. So it's only 10 million people we have to worry about. and sort of like, where's this guy going with this? You know, they said they want a smooth transition to those who never had coverage, but it doesn't affect a great part of the population. It only affects like 10% of the whole country or 10 million people. So he's like kind of like just washes that off as like the people who would be affected most as a small percentage of the population. He then goes into saying they want to keep pre-existing conditions covered. They want those who are under 26 and under to stay, remain on their parents' plan, and they want no lifetime caps. So obviously the phone calls are getting into them from the outside constituents, like the people you're supposed to be representing, not your people that's that right. You are representing. But it seems like they're acknowledging that, right? And then
you see this, actually, this is something that we're seeing all over the place, right? We had, what was the guy's name? He's a Republican representative here. I got it right here. I think I have it right here. Maybe, no. It should come up. They're basically, this was reported, Mo Brooks. He's a Republican representative from Alabama, right? This past week, he was talking about the protest, basically. And he said this on this morning show with Tony and Gary radio show, and it was also brought up by CNN, is that this is Republican Mo Brooks. He said, quote, "I don't know if we're going to be able to repeal Obamacare now because these folks who support Obamacare are very active," unquote. He goes on to say, quote, "They're putting pressure on congressmen, and there's not a counter effort to steal the spine of some of these congressmen and toss up districts across the country," right? So just what you just said, I mean, it's not a question about whether or not that these protests are having an effect. They are, to the fact that Republicans, right, you're talking about deep red Alabama Republicans coming out and basically saying these protests are having an impact, and I don't think we're going to be able to repeal this in the way before. So there's no doubt about that.
Right. And then so he then goes on to say, speaking about the GOP retreat that happened in Philadelphia a few weeks ago, he said that in that retreat, Donald Trump and Mike Pence were both in a line with Congress with their goals coming out of that retreat. So it seems like there's a continuity between the GOP and Donald Trump coming out of the retreat that happened in Philadelphia over the ACA and over repealing and replacing.
Well, and what I found interesting about this too, as well, is because I don't know if you've seen this reporting on this, but the replace plan is not being released even to some Republicans. So Democrats in Congress have been trying to get a hold of this to see what's in this repeal thing. Because they keep on saying they have a plan, but it's under lock and key someplace. Even what's his face? Libertarian dude. What's his name?
Rand Paul.
Yeah, Rand Paul. Even Rand Paul was requesting to be able to kind of review this thing, and they will not give it to him. Right. So he's been out there on the record in the media saying he has no idea what it is, and they're not allowing him to look at it. So it's interesting seeing even a window through this chamber meeting about some of the things that are in there. So this is a crazy situation we're in.
So and then the next thing that happened, they now move to go in and talk about reforming the tax code. Smucker, this is like paraphrasing it, wants capital to come back into the market. He thinks there's too much capital sitting overseas or sitting on the sidelines, as he saw it. And he says they want to lower corporate and income tax rates, and they want to simplify the tax code, get rid of some. He didn't go into the specifics about it, and neither did this Chamber of Commerce lady go into the specifics about it. But they were saying, hey, a lot of people here might not agree with some of the things we're advocating for. So what we should do is just say we all support reforming the tax codes as a way of getting it all on board. She was giving them messaging, yes. Basically saying, hey, let's all get on top of this tax reform code, even though it might not benefit all of us or might hurt some of us, but we should all get around this tax reform plan just to put that message out there pretty much. And then he said he supports a 20% border adjustment tax on all imports coming into the country. So who's going to pay for that 20% border adjustment tax? You are.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, there's some, even with this kind of this border tax stuff, who knows what the details are on this? Because there's arguments to be made about, look, you don't want to have, there's tariffs being put up, like big tariffs against kind of U.S. products kind of going one places, but then no tariffs whatsoever on products coming in, and how that actually guts American jobs and manufacturing and things like this. But from what I understand, again, I'm speaking out of turn here because I haven't really looked into this, because I've heard this a few times now about what exactly they're talking about there. The worst case scenario is you go into this kind of weird isolationism, which could, you know, be decimating, but we'll see on that one. Well, what's fascinating about this to me, and Sean and I were talking about this on the break. I don't know what everybody else thinks about this, but given what this meeting was about and the kind of, just the content of what the chamber is, you know, this would be a really good place to think about long-term action, to get people inside their local chamber of commerce meetings for these kind of breakfasts, especially with politicians, to see what the messaging is, see what the agenda is, and so on. Now, the downside of this stuff is like, you know, it's $40, right? It was $40 for non-members of chamber to kind of get into this meeting. But if this is the kind of stuff that we devoted some of our time to in each of one of our communities, and put in, you know, get a few people inside to kind of see what's going on, this could be really important. So, something else to put on our agendas potentially down the road, to actually look what's happening in the chamber, because it's not just those people that are political leaders. Like, the pressure has to stay on there too, as well. But we have to look at other areas of influence too, as well. And the Chamber of Commerce, right? The National Chamber of Commerce has been one of the leaders in kind of driving us into the ground. So, go ahead. Yeah.
So, I guess this would be a nice transition to our next part. Lloyd Smucker called Donald Trump's speech outstanding.
Oh, Jesus.
And he says it's one of the best Donald Trump speeches he has ever seen.
Well, first of all, I mean, the bar is set ankle high here. Okay. So, I mean, you know, that's kind of like a gimme, right? You know, I mean, I'm willing to give people that as like political discourse to be able to say that.
But this is, he's saying this in private to people who are like-minded, like he is, you know, who are in that like inner business circle, who say, hey, you shouldn't be worried. We're actually working really close with the president here. And in my opinion, he gave one of the best speeches ever. And you know what? There's a lot of people in that room who, I guarantee 99% of the people in that room, besides me and the four protesters and maybe some of the media people in there, level-headed camera people and anchors would disagree with that. But, you know, speaking to that, it was just a fascinating event. You know, I wasn't expecting I didn't bring a paper or pen in. I didn't know if I could do that.
Right.
But I just started rapid tweeting stuff on my Facebook page, like live blogging it a little bit, just so I can like remember what's going on.
Right. Well, I mean, look, I think for the right and the kind of like libertarian kind of leaning kind of business community, corporate community, that kind of stuff. I think what they've been waiting for is, you know, look, it's true that any kind of business doesn't like when things get crazy because you don't know what to depend on. So all they're looking for is for Trump not to be a disaster, because they're getting every freaking thing that they want. Right. But they also recognize that there's a downside if you have this guy who's, you know, just a completely loose cannon all the time. So I think I look at it like that. That's what that's all about. I mean, that's pretty much it. So, I mean, well, and this was, you know, we were talking about this today too as well. What was absolutely crazy is that, you know, Donald Trump's speech was basically him reading a prepared speech. And so all this kind of like report, oh, he did a really good job. He sounded presidential. He did all this kind of stuff. He got a great, great speech. Basically, the bar, like I said, the bar was set so low that all you had to do to say you did well is to read a speech and not like, you know, kind of fall into like attacking people in the audience with disabilities. You know, I mean, literally, I mean, that's all you had to do. You had to get up there and sound as kind of like monotone, as direct as possible, without raising the hackles of too many people. And that's all it was looking for. And the response was insane. I mean, you see these like, you know, the media commentators and even some of the Democratic, like big, fairly decent sized names and Democrats coming out and kind of praising Trump's speech. I mean, I think the media just really wants to get into this groove of normalization that we really just can't allow.
Yeah. I did not watch the speech. I was out Tuesday night. I forgot it was even on. And, you know, so I was watching some of the post reactions to it, and I couldn't believe some of the stuff I heard. I didn't like the Van Jones thing was up there, I guess, you know, I think Van Jones said something. And, I actually went back and listened to the clip that Donald Trump was talking about when that Van Jones was talking about, like that part of Donald Trump. And I was disgusted. I thought like that might have been one of the most vile things, that one of the most authoritarian fascist type of things you could have ever hear. War propaganda, like the whole nine yards.
Here's the thing, right? Let's just walk through this, right? So here's what Van Jones says. Okay, Van Jones, there's a moment in the speech, if you didn't watch it, right? You've probably seen some of this stuff out there, but the moment in the speech where he does, look, every freaking president does this, right? This is so like textbook, you know, normal as possible. Like there's a woman who's there whose husband was in the military and was killed in action, right? So he brings her there to recognize her. Now, okay, so that's part one, right? So part one is that this is a standard feature of what goes on in, you know, in presidential addresses, right? There's always the wanting to recognize our soldiers, especially ones that have fallen, right? And their survivors, right? And talk about their sacrifice. That's there. So the woman is there, right? But the thing is, her husband was a Navy SEAL that was killed in Yemen. Right. He was killed in Yemen during this, for all practical accounts, a botched military operation. Right. That probably should not have gone forward. Right. That it looked like this was just a military operation in an area that was really questionable about why the military needed to go in there. But Trump was just looking to exercise his military muscle. So that he could look good and have this strong on terror thing. They went into Yemen and they thought it was going to be an easy operation. It was not, right? And there was a loss of life. Women and children were killed during the raid, and Americans lost their lives too as well, right? And so she comes in here. So now look, that's part of the backdrop, right? So brings up here, points to her, says, her husband Ryan's a hero and all that kind of stuff. And I get that, right? I mean, that guy, you know, he went in, he followed his duty, went in, into Yemen, into an operation that probably shouldn't have been conducted, and now he's dead, right? And that is underscores like why it's important who's in the White House and why it's important about what our policy is. Anyways, she stands up, people clap for her, as you would expect, right? Democrats and Republicans alike, she's crying, right? And Trump then, after the standing ovation for this woman, basically says, your husband, Ryan, he's probably looking down on you now, right? And now he's happy because you probably just broke a record for the time of a standing ovation. I mean, I just don't even know where that comes from, right? So anyways, that's the scene, right? That's the scene that everyone seems to wants to gush over. And Van Jones, right, from CNN, right? Van Jones, right, not the right-wing dude, right? You know, he's definitely Democratic. It comes out, and this is what he says. He said, quote, he became president of the United States in that moment, period, right? That was one of the most extraordinary moments you have ever seen in American politics. My jaw freaking hit the desk at that point. Right. So I'm sitting there. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Right. And like Democrats are so quick to want to rush to kind of normalize this guy so they can get back to business as usual, like it was under the Obama administration.
Like this wasn't Good Morning America. This wasn't like, a shining city on the hill type of thing. Like going back to some of those Reagan iconographies. No, this was him. What's the correct word here? Like whore. Not like I can't go there, but like him.
Look, it shows you this, right? It shows you, look, somebody who wrote the speech was like, okay, we're going to do this thing. We're going to recognize this stuff. And just, there's nothing wrong with it and all that. That's every president does that. You look, Obama did that, but right across the, it doesn't.
I'm sure that, but I'm like that part about the
one
record.
Part where he went off script, right? It was a part that he went off script. He went back right to ratings, right? And this was and that's what he cares about, right? That's what he cares about. And he thinks other people give half a crap about that too as well.
He's a reality TV star president.
It's incredible. It's incredible. So, I mean, you look at the stuff, it's absolutely, the media is gushing about that. And I have to say, it's not exactly the same, but to show you how much corporate media wants to rush to normalization or to make everything fun, right? I was just watching, right, before we went on the podcast this morning, I was watching, a little bit of MSNBC and Stephanie Ruhle's on there and for MSNBC Live in the morning. And I just caught I wasn't really paying attention. I caught the end of their program. And they closed the program out with basically a Trump tweet watch. and saying about, hey, if you look at the statistics, you see that his number of tweets has kind of actually started to pair off the last week. What's going on there? Before, like at first when he took office, this is how many tweets he had, and this is what he was saying. Now it's starting to level off a little bit. So maybe he's finding out that, you know, tweeting's not so much fun. And they played this little snip of an interview. I have no idea where it came from, where it suggested that Trump is starting to get tired of tweeting. He needs to get back to some real business. And like the normalization script is being set right now. And I was watching that. I'm like, oh my God, it's like a game show in the freaking Hunger Games. That's what I'm watching right now.
One of the things we were talking about this before we went on today, you know, like being out here in Harrisburg, I don't know one print journalist who would do that type of stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Exactly. You know, like we have our disagreements with like some of the organizations out here, but I think they would be disavowed by their peers very quickly if they did something like that, conservative, Republican, or liberal, Democrat, whatever your ideologies fall out in the newsroom. You know, there's a mix of people, but they're one thing, there's basic respect in there for everyone's work. Right. You know, like someone who's a Republican, who's conservative in that newsroom would not come after me for doing what we do because we put out good work.
Right.
You know, like, and that's the type of thing where like, you know, you don't see that type of hack journalism within the print or that normalization that's been going on.
Or it's at least at the very least, it's much less so. Right. I mean, it's like, you know, you look at it's sad. It really is sad. Right. And here's, you know, and the problem is that but fewer and fewer people are actually getting their news from print sources. Right. I think that we're starting to see a little bit of a recovery there. And that's really good news. But more and more, you know, again, this has been the case for a while. We see that that most people get their news from TV, right? Increasingly, people are getting their news from social media, particularly Facebook. But you know, TV is where most people go. If you go into a bar, right, there's not newspapers printed up on the walls to read, right? I mean, they're playing Fox News or CNN or something like this. And that's how most people, I think, experience politics. And that's, I'm telling you, it's really disconcerting to me. But again, here we go, running along. But so, you know, we got to just, you know, it's the kind of thing we got to keep on. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that why it matters that, you know, you subscribe to your local paper and things like this. Why it matters that journalists are getting paid for the work, especially print journalists, because right, that's where really all news originates. What we see on TV for the most part is just kind of regurgitated stuff from print journalism anyway. So that's important to keep in mind. So I want to just I want to blow through one thing quick, and I want to come back to the Democratic response. It's like one, we got to mention, I mean, you have this brand new is that Jeff Sessions, right, of course, has recused himself from the Russian probe into the connections between Donald Trump and his campaign and Russian operatives during the presidential campaign and beyond. There is questions about whether or not the Jeff Sessions has actually instructed the FBI to block the probe, or if that's happening by the FBI themselves, it's unclear. But the big bombshell was broken first, I guess, by the Washington Post, was that Sessions, basically in his confirmation hearing, he was asked directly by Al Franken, right? And then there was a follow-up by, I'm forgetting who was Leahy, I think. Patrick Leahy, I think, maybe set the response. I'm not exactly sure. But a written response, but basically asked him directly about whether or not he had any contact with Russian officials or operatives during the presidential election. And Sessions answered that question definitively no. And he answered that question again on camera afterwards, definitively no. Now we have revelations, right? Washington Post first reporting that nope, actually he had. He had met with a Russian ambassador at least twice, if not three times. Wall Street Journal reported that Sessions met or had a phone call with some Russian operative during that same period of time too, as well. It's unclear if the phone call was the same as a meeting or not. So at least twice, if not three times, and more is coming forward. Now Sessions did a hastily arranged press conference, basically like, oh, I guess I should have thought a little more about my answer. But I, you know, sometimes I can get confused about what I'm doing. So he gets up there and he had to recuse himself. And he even
I thought that was just the Brooklyn accent that he had.
Oh my God, tell me about it. And he even said in the press conference that he was instructed by the ethics committee that he should recuse himself from that. And that's the only thing that got him to get out of that investigation. So that's the quick run through on Sessions. It's going to be something to watch. I mean, it's a big drama fest about what's going on with Russia. I don't mean to say that to diminish the importance of what's happening and what that means for, you know, our government and all that kind of stuff. It's more of the same. So you got to keep a watch on these people every step of the way. What I do want to talk about before we do go to a final break is I don't know what else to call it, but the absolute pathetic response from Democrats to Trump's speech. So if you have not watched this, right? So basically, you know, every time there's a joint address or a State of the Union, and this is the one thing I was confused about. So why the hell are they calling a joint address and a State of the Union? I said, oh, okay. Cause like he hasn't been in office long enough. Typically they wait 1 year before they do. So they call this one, traditionally they call this the joint address instead of a State of the Union. Okay. Got that checkbox. But in response to any kind of joint address or State of the Union, the opposing party gets to have a response. And so, you know, the Democrats, they know that, you know, people are in the streets, they're protesting, they're gaining more power because they're showing up. The progressives have new wind in their sails. This Trump administration is starting to feel that pressure. And Democrats are going to continue to fight. So who do they choose? Who do they choose? They choose a former retired governor of Kentucky, former governor Steve Beshear. And he gets on and gives this lackluster, like sleepy-eyed response that is more of the, we've all got to kind of get along. We're really all together, right? I was blown away. I was like, I literally got physically sick watching this. So I want to give you an example. Here's a sample. This is his opening. Well, after he says, I am Steve Beshear, right? After he says that, this is his opening. Okay. First paragraph. I was governor of Kentucky from 2007 to 2015. Now I'm a private citizen. I'm here in Lexington, Kentucky, some 400 miles from Washington at a diner with some neighbors, Democrats and Republicans, where we just watched the president's address. Listen to this line. This blows my mind. I'm a proud Democrat, but first and foremost, I'm a proud Republican and Democrat mostly, and American. And like many of you, I'm worried about the future of this nation. That's your lead. Your lead is like, I don't know if I'm a Democrat or Republican. I just know I just want everyone to get along. I mean, this is his lead. It was remarkable, right? Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders gave his response on Facebook, right? And I was like, now there's the response that we should be hearing.
Or Cory Booker goes on MSNBC and just completely hashes through all of his talking points within 2.5-3 minutes. And they start asking, how come you weren't picked?
Exactly.
To give the response. And he's like, well, that's above my pay grade.
Exactly. And that's exactly the point. That is exactly the point. So I got some pushback on some comments that I made online about, you know, Democrats, because I was so freaking pissed about this. And I'm like, I can't believe they have learned nothing since the election. And somebody wrote back, you know, kind of posted a comment and basically said, that's not true. And I said, I had to qualify. No, that's right. Really, what we're talking about here is that we're talking about the National Democratic Party is where the problem is. Like I was expecting. Like I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention to this because I knew it was going to be a big freaking dog and pony show. You could spell out exactly what was going to happen ahead of time. But so I had to pay a whole lot of attention to what arrangements were being made. But then I was thinking, so, you know, why wouldn't you have, you just had this big Democratic Party fight, right? Why not, you know, not even fight, but election, right? So now you've got Tom Perez as the head of the Democratic Party, right? A DNC. Why not put him out there? Or for that matter, right? Why not put Keith Ellison out there? Right. Since Keith Ellison is now the deputy chair, why not give him a role to kind of that response? You want to bring the noise, you bring it like that. Or even just like you just said, why not have in Cory Booker? Right. Not my favorite politician, but a Cory Booker at least knows how to play the game. Right. He could get out there and give that kind of response. So, instead, they had this confused old timer who represents basically, you know, this is what was playing in the back of my head while I was watching that, Sean. Are you a Monty Python fan at all?
I've seen some, not that big, right. But
you gotta go back and watch this one scene, right? Where he's got both little, it's during the plague, right? You got a cart that's going down there, down the center of the aisle. They're going, bring out your dead, bring out your dead. And that's what I was with. The Democrats are tracking out like this is like the death spiral of the Democratic Party. It's like you're gonna parade this in front of like American people after Trump's thing. So what the hell's left? Well, you got Van Jones gonna praise Trump next. So I guess it's insane.
No, like one of the things, like so we were at the Saccone here. This goes back to the Saccone thing, right? And I'm talking to some Republican lobbyists, and I'm just like, you know, 90% of politics is theater. Mm-hmm. It's theater. And I had this conversation with a couple of people throughout the week. And you know who doesn't realize that 90% of politics is theater? The Democratic Party.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, especially in today's age. Like, I mean, we now have a firebrand whack job in Rick Saccone, who all bets are off now. Like, if he's going to, like, yeah, if you told me 5 or 6 years ago he was going to lose, this is a state that did elect Rick Santorum.
That's right.
To the United States Senate. So, like, a Rick Saccone Senate candidacy and win is not out of the pale. Like, it's not out of the ordinary here. This can happen. And, you know, like, he's good at doing theater. I mean, like, as crazy as he is, he knows how to do theater. He knows how to get people, like, knows how to give that speech where, like, you wheel someone out of the retirement home.
I just can't. I mean, seriously, and look, I want to draw a really clear line, right? Because is that my frustration level gets so high so quickly when I see this kind of crap, right? It's like another version. Last week we were talking about, you know, the Republican who's now going to represent a district of 95% Democrats, right? Because the freaking Democratic Party sucks down there.
So do you want to talk about the Ryan Grimm story this week?
In a second. So I want to say, I want to make a clear line and distinction between, we're talking about the state party in like Pennsylvania state party leadership, national leadership, not everyone who's involved in the Democratic Party. Why do I say that? Because right now, at the same time, like the leadership is like off in La La Land, right? They're still celebrating the Oscars, I guess, right? They're still wondering like about, they're still, you know, I think that's the number one issue. It's in the Democratic Party leadership right now is like the scandal over the, you know, the Oscars, right? As opposed to freaking what's happening in their own country. But what's happening at the ground level is exactly the opposite of that. Right. Activists are taking over local Democratic Party apparatuses and Democratic clubs and they're kind of running candidates. We were talking about this before we got on, Sean. Right. Is that the fact is that more so than ever before, we're signing petitions for people to get on the ballot.
I never signed a petition before in my life.
Well, exactly. We just had somebody who came to our door. This never had this. We had, you know, during general elections, there'd be people come by, but someone who's going to run for county magistrate. Right. And she's gathering signatures. Right. And again, this is the kind of activism that we need. And, you know, at some level, you just got to forget the National Democratic Party because they're just going to have their heads up their asses for way too long and focus on what's going on locally.
Oh, so now can I talk about the Ryan Grimm story?
Yes, now you have my permission to talk about Ryan Grimm.
So, you know, we're talking about the Democratic Party. You know, Virginia is a state that's turning more blue, right?
This is going to hurt me, Sean. You recognize this, don't you?
Yes. Well, yeah, okay. Okay, so it's turning blue, and Terry McAuliffe, I guess he's up for term limits, right? He's not running again. I don't know why, but I was just breezing through this. And Terry McAuliffe, his lieutenant governor, I don't have the name, but Terry McAuliffe endorsed this lieutenant governor to become the next governor, right? Because he has a progressive challenger, and this guy's the establishment Democrat. This lieutenant governor, admit it, your face right now is priceless. Yeah, He admitted to vote for George W. Bush, not once, but twice.
Twice.
your main person you're running out there is a party. Voting for Bush once is a disqualifier. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? I could see, like, if you voted for like a Republican back in the 80s because you had a disagreement with someone, or like a Republican on the local level. Like, I would vote for a couple Republicans on the local level because I know them personally, and they're sane, moderate people. If I live in that district, I wouldn't agree with them 100% of the time, but they would hear you out. No, you voted for George W. Bush twice. Someone who's killed hundreds of thousands of people. Yep. You voted for him twice.
That's right. Because that's what wins, Sean. No, but this is what
like,
I mean.
I get that
argument. Like 10 years ago, right? I mean, but no, let's go even before that. Let's say 10, 15 years ago, right? There was still that kind of mindset, right? That felt like, okay, look, Democrat, the populist argument, the kind of, you know, argument in favor of workers, of women's rights and things like this was not going to get somebody elected, right? Those people had their chance. Right. That whole mentality of kind of, you know, the Bill Clinton, let's move everything to the center and let's be the people that, you know, are of no party, that they're all Americans and all this kind of stuff. We don't need no stinking parties no more. We love everybody. Right. Really. And then we're the better people because we can do that. Right. That's dead. Right. That was killed in this last election. Finally, the gigantic nail in the coffin is done. It's buried. And yet these people, like the freaking Walking Dead, come out of that and keep the same narrative going. Well, I think we need a Bush supporter to run in the Democratic Party because that's who's going to win in Virginia, where everything we see, Virginia is going in the opposite direction. It's freaking crazy making.
Yeah. Just wanted to throw that little nugget out there for everyone.
No, but I mean, like, again, this is so do you, I didn't even ask you before when we were talking about this. So do you know who the challenger is?
I do not, but I know it's a progressive, a more liberal progressive Virginian from like Northern Virginia outside of that beltway, the D.C. beltway type.
OK, so what we'll
like emerging population part of Virginia.
Cool. All right. Yeah. And yeah, Northern Virginia, especially, right? Northern Virginia, Fairfax County, things like that, but also some other significant pockets throughout that state. So I'll tell you what, we'll take a look at that for next week. We'll come back next week. I always want to look into this guy a little bit to see what his challenger is like, you know, because if it's nothing but putting a stick in the eye of Terry McCullough and the Democratic Party down there, just to say that, you know, our little podcast and our blog, we're going to freaking follow this race because you people are stupid, right? And that's how pissed off I am. So we'll check up on that for next week. So we've run you way too long once again, folks. But we're going to take another quick break and we come back. Hopefully we're going to find some silver linings at the bottom of some kind of bottle. So we'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Talk to you in a second.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism, and frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. So, Sean, here we are. We're at the end of the show once again. It is a Friday, and I'm very psyched about that. And hopefully that it looks like the weather's going to be nice, at least around here. So maybe we get out a little bit and a little break from the insanity for the week. But, you know, you never want to take too much time kind of looking away. So we've got some stuff to look for. So I want to give folks just another reminder. The Rick Smith Show, if you go to ricksmithshow.com, you can do his weekly radio show. That is live every day from 10 to noon. You can go at the ricksmithshow.com. It streams live on YouTube. But you can also pick up the podcast any place you get your podcast. We recommend Podbean since that's where we host and that's where Rick hosts too as well. So you can check that out. But 3 weeks ago, as we mentioned at the top of the show, is that Rick has launched his national TV show, weekly TV show on Free Speech Network, Free Speech TV Network, and that it goes that plays every Saturday night at 7 p.m. And you can get that by going to freespeech.org, and that streams online live. Or you can go to, if you have DirecTV or you have Dish Network, one of the satellite providers, Free Speech TV is on there. Or if you have Roku, by any chance, you can get a Free Speech TV Roku app and you could stream it live in your TV. This Saturday, Rick and I, Rick had me on as we do a short segment called The Resistance Report. And The Resistance Report is basically taking a look at the resistance that's happening across this country. And this week, we talk a little about some from Pennsylvania's own, some amazing students who are organized a statewide network, a PA Student Power Network. So we preview them a little bit as along with a bunch of other stuff. So some other events that are coming up before I turn it over to Sean for some of the good news thing. Tomorrow in Allentown at Muhlenberg College is being held How We Fight Back, Shaping Your Community Even in the Trump Age. This is an event that is being put on by State Representative Mike Schlossberg of Allentown. And what's important about this event is, if you don't remember, we were all set to go to this about a month ago. But so many people responded that so many people responded that basically you had to reschedule it for a larger room, and that's being held tomorrow now. Currently, I'm looking at the page right now, and actually it looks like it is sold out. So, just pay attention to what comes out of this. We hopefully we'll get some reporting on the event. Let's see what went on. Also coming up later this month, the March 25th in Philadelphia, is the Philadelphia Troublemaker School. This is being put on by Labor Notes. People don't know Labor Notes. It is the kind of rank and file activist media outlet for labor across the country. And they hold training schools to give you an idea about how they, what it's about. This is from their website. So Philadelphia area troublemakers are gathering for a day of skill building workshops that will help union members and labor activists build power on the job. Hear from union leaders and activists about how to fight back and win, take part in training such as beating apathy, building strong labor community coalitions, and assertive grievance handling. Network with local organizers and share strategies on a citywide plan to beat back the billionaires' agenda. So you can go to www.labornotes.org/Philadelphia, and you can kind of check out the event there. And you can also register or sign up. I will be there at the Troublemaker School, both in some of the workshops and there for Raging Chicken Press. So please do stop by and let us know that you're here to learn about the fight. And lastly, you recall we talked last week about a burgeoning pipeline action that is happening out in Lancaster County. It's called The Stand. And this is a resistance to the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline. I think we called it the wrong name last week, and I apologize for that. The Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline. And last weekend, they held their first nonviolent action training. Well, apparently that is going to continue to go. Tomorrow, the training continues out at The Stand. And you can go to their Facebook page, the Lancaster Stand. Just look up Lancaster Stand on Facebook, and you get details right there about the nonviolent action and training out at The Stand in Lancaster County.
Also, yes. With The Stand, sorry to interrupt.
No,
this popped up as we were recording or getting ready to record our podcast. There's been some developments with that. It seems like one of the companies involved with the drilling this pipeline mm-hmm. has gotten the permit to do horizontal drilling near the Conestoga River, which is where The Stand is taking place. Mm-hmm. And this these drill cuts will be going through ancient Native burial grounds. And this is going to have this action tomorrow will have local Native groups involved.
Wow. That's pretty incredible. Here it is. I just had us have it there and bring it up. It says Brookfield Energy permits Williams partner. Oh, I see. Brookfield Energy permits Williams partners to drill through their land and thus through sacred Native burial grounds. We are not surprised when millionaires and billionaires choose to side with each other, but we are still outraged. Our resolve to take nonviolent action to stop the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline is only strengthened. If you are ready to take action, sign and pledge to resist here. And this is www.wearelancastercounty.org/pledge-to-resist. Again, if you, this is the top post on Lancaster Stand. You go to their Facebook page, Lancaster Stand. You could take action there. And it looks like Saturday at 10 a.m., you're going to have the leaders from the Circle Legacy Center, Lancaster American Indian Movement, and the Lancasters Against the Pipeline will be holding a press conference. So this is going to be kind of an important event, and this seems to be upping the timeline for when we might see a mass direct action out there in Lancaster. So with that, kind of gearing up, steeling our spines, strengthening ourselves, and reminding ourselves about the spirit of community, let's talk some beer, Sean. What do you got for us this week?
Well, there's been some big changes over at Pizza Boy. They got rid of their restaurant license, which allowed them to have 100 beers on tap and fill those lines with beers from out of Pennsylvania.
Wait a minute. The pizza's gone?
No, not the pizza. They got rid of the the pizza and all still there. It's acting like a restaurant, but they changed up the licenses.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to tell me they didn't have their pizza anymore, because their pizza was freaking awesome too.
No. What ended up happening is they switched the license from an R license to a brewery license, and basically they can't sell six packs to go anymore or bottles to go, but they can only sell Pizza Boy beers to go. So, and then there at the restaurant, they can have 100 beers on tap still. It just has to be filled with Pennsylvania craft breweries. So that's kind of what the idea is. And then
let me just get this straight. So they will not be able to have stuff from that's from out of state?
That's right.
Oh, okay. And then are they still going to be able to fill growlers and crawlers and stuff like that?
Yes, only Pizza Boy beers, though.
Only Pizza Boy beers. Gotcha. Because
it's operating under a Pizza Boy license, the Pizza Boy brewery. But as an offset to these changes, which I think is a really good thing, they will now be producing, they'll be canning on a regular basis.
Wow.
So like every couple of weeks, they're going to be canning beer. And this week, they're going to be canning their Spandex Glitter and Egos, more of a New England style IPA, hazy, cloudy, juicier IPA. Mm-hmm. The Citra Pils, which is a really nice summer beer. If you ever never had the Citra Pils, really easy drinking, like
it 5%. Is. That's really nice. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, and then the Sunny Side Up is coming back in cans this week, so expect to see it sometime next week. Yeah, stay tuned to the Isles of Hanson Facebook page, and you'll be able to see that. Also, another thing, because they have a brewery license, there are no more takeout limits, so you can now come in, buy a case of beer, and leave.
Oh, nice!
If you want to, you could buy as many cases as you like in per transaction. So.
As many cases as I like. Those are dangerous words, Sean.
But yeah, so there's big changes coming. I like this because now I can get, a 12-pack of good Pizza Boy beer or a case of Pizza Boy beer and bring it home and share the wealth. Like, you know what I mean? When we come home. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see how this goes.
That's going to be really, really cool. So, yeah, so check it out. You go to Ales of Hamden, and you can check out all the kind of updated information there. I look forward to it. I get mixed on this, right? Because on the one hand, it's like the idea of kind of like traveling out to Pizza Boy to be able to kind of, get this stuff is kind of special. But then, the idea that I might be end up having cans of Pizza Boy and kind of locally is going to be freaking awesome too as well. So interesting.
I don't know how much you're going to be able to can and get out into the market, local markets, mm-hmm. but you might be able to start seeing more Pizza Boy or local bars on tap. So.
Yeah, even that. Well, I look at it as a step, I think that the beer is so incredible. I mean, seriously, Pizza Boy beer is absolutely fantastic. I can't see, there being a too long of a line before they start to go to distribution. But, what do I know? I'm not working there. So, all right, cool. Well, Sean, you got anything on tap? No pun intended for the weekend.
My work schedule switched up a little bit. So, it's a slow time of year and my weekend hours have gotten cut, which I'm bringing in a little bit less money, but you know what? I'll still be able to pay the bills. And I think it's a good trade-off right now, trading some personal time on the weekends, being able to, have a Saturday morning open until 4 o'clock or getting out Sunday at 4 o'clock and have the rest of the night open, instead of closing 4 days a week, I'm only closing twice a week now.
Right.
So. I'm looking forward to these changes and I'm looking forward to enjoying the spring weather. I'll be taking my camera lessons pretty soon with the camera I got, and maybe I'll be doing some freelance work in the future.
Man, that's pretty awesome. You know, I also want to kind of give people a heads up. We will have a another writer coming on board, Julia Scheib. She's written actually for us before, and she is somebody that I think she's a fantastic writer. She's you know, worked as a working journalist for a while, and she's got a piece that's going to be coming up later on today about Smucker's book, not the Lloyd Smucker, but Smucker's book on how
Smucker's cousin.
Yeah, how that's a whole other story. How hegemony works. And so look for her piece there too as well. We're so excited that she's been able to come back on board. She's had, conflicts in work schedule, and she's been doing a bunch of other stuff too as well. So we're doing this, and we think that having someone on the ground, she's out there kind of in Lancaster area and York area. And she's going to be on the ground in those areas, which we, have been hoping to get somebody out there for a long time. And so I'm really psyched that she's gonna be coming out back on board. So, check her stuff out when it goes up later today, and tell her you like what you're doing and that you're glad that she's aboard. So anyhow, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back next week with the Out the Coop podcast. Just so everybody knows, the following week will be St. Patrick's Day, that Friday. We will not be having a podcast on that Friday. I'm going to be away for the week. I've got a conference that I get to. So
you'll be at the bar, don't lie.
No, I'm going to be in Portland, man. I'm going to be in Portland, Oregon. It's going to be pretty cool. I'm actually on St. Patrick's Day. I'm presenting a paper on basically kind of independent, independent education, radical education experiments, and in the early 20th century, and plus the growing kind of workers' movements and kind of quasi-independent political organizations that are beginning to say that, look, we've got to start to train our own movement. So it's kind of a good time to be talking about this stuff out there.
So I have one quick question.
Yeah.
Since you're going to be out in Portland, Oregon,
yeah,
on St. Patty's Day, are you going to get your green on in more ways than one? Or
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm actually going to be my whole family's going to have the green on. So we're all going out there together. So it's going to be, it's going to be fun. I know some people in the area. My good friend Stu, who lives in Northern Ireland, his sister actually lives out in Portland, and she's like, she and her husband do kayak tours. They're professional kayakers and things like this. So we might do some kayaking while we're out there. We'll see what the weather's like. But kind of looking forward to it. So that's what we're doing. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Hope you're going to have a great weekend, and keep up the fight, folks. We're getting into that point where it's about sustainability. We got to keep the fight going. It's not just about outrage. It's about organizing. So keep up the fight. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next week. This is Kevin Mahoney. Until then, see ya.